Ladies and gentlemen,
thank you for standing by and welcome to the 3M Second Quarter 2006 Earnings Conference Call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, you will be invited to participate in the question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad, and questions will be taken in the order they are received. If you would like to withdraw your question, press star, then the number two. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, July 25th, 2006. We would now like to turn the call over to 3M.
Good morning. I'm Matt Ginter, Head of Investor Relations for 3M, and welcome to our second quarter 2006 business review. Before we begin, I have a few brief announcements. As in prior quarters, today's discussion will follow a series of PowerPoint slides, which are currently available on our Investor Relations website. During today's conference call, we will make certain predictive statements that reflect our current views and estimates about our future performance and financial results. These statements are based on certain assumptions and expectations of future events that are subject to risks and uncertainties. Item 1A of our most recent Form 10-Q lists some of the most important risk factors that could cause actual results to differ from our predictions. Both George Buckley, our Chairman, President, and CEO, and Pat Campbell, our CFO, will make some formal comments on our results and forward outlook, and then we will open it up for Q&A. So now I'd like to turn the program over to George Buckley. George?
Thank you, Matt, and good morning, everybody. Clearly this quarter was a tougher one than the last one, and I want to get right down to explaining what went on. Let me begin by stating how disappointed we were in our performance, and that no one in this call is more disappointed in it than me. The rapid impact of the optical films inventory correction clearly accounts for the lion's share of the shortfall this quarter. You also saw this pattern repeated in the earnings of the many LCD OEM manufacturers that we supply our products to. We had three things which happened in this optical films business this quarter. First, sales of monitors, where 3M has traditionally had high attachment rates and good margins, sharply declined. Desktop monitors have matured and are becoming commoditized. Second, we had a simultaneous inventory correction in the channel for LCD TVs. And lastly, we had a troublesome startup of a new optical film plant that makes DBEF film product. The new plant first went live with commercial products at low volumes in November of last year and helped to service the market as LCD TV production accelerated. We've had difficulty manufacturing consistently excellent film, and the new line was shut down for much of April due to a mechanical failure. The film line was quickly repaired and has been running since the 1st of May. Overall, the startup has been challenging, and yields are, by our standards, very low. It's important to note that the plant has been delivering significant quantities of high-quality film to customers, and we are able to screen out film that does not meet specifications prior to shipping. It's hard to separate all the contributory costs here, but we estimate these issues are costing us a couple of points of margin in this business. These plants are very complex, and the manufacturing processes to get high yield and consistently high-quality product is very challenging. This is why it's so hard for others to enter these high-performance optical film markets. It's not at all unusual for these things to happen during plant startups. I would state here that even with this yield challenge, we have more than enough capacity to meet anticipated customer demand later this year. This plant was added to increase capacity in anticipation of growth, as well as to significantly reduce the manufacturing costs for large format films for LCD TVs. Longer term, as larger formats get more popular, this is an important strategic advantage for 3M. The dynamics of this rapid change in the consumer electronics field are well known. We have been heretofore blessed by strong growth in LCD TVs and monitors, driven by early adopter purchases of these products. But in my view, we're beginning to see the LCD TV market changing gradually from a pure early adopter mode to the more traditional seasonal cycles seen in other consumer electronic purchases. The inventory correction that took place in the channel may therefore have been exaggerated by these seasonal pattern changes. To people unfamiliar with these markets, the sharp fall-off seemed unusual and surprising. But let me explain how these markets work. This is a market where the end product has a life cycle of only 9 to 12 months, and the price of that product is declining by 20 to 25% annually. So if the retailer and manufacturer do not correct the inventory ASAP, if they see excess, perhaps only in one quarter, the end product is potentially obsolete and worth considerably less at retail than it was previously. Consumer electronics are not like wine. They do not get better with age. In environments of relatively low margin for OEM manufacturers of these products, it's absolutely vital that they do not become the victims of excess inventory. This all explains why, in these kinds of markets, inventory corrections can be sharp and disturbing. Even if you have the best sales and operating planning process possible, precise predictions of volume is hard. But they are just that, corrections. And the demand changes can be just as high in the opposite direction, especially if seasonality creeps more vividly into the picture. It does not signify that somebody in the management of these companies was asleep at the switch. Things simply change tremendously quickly. From our perspective, it also tells you why it's critical that we continue to invest in order to diversify our offerings in the Optical Systems Division and throughout the broad 3M portfolio in order to prevent a potentially cyclical business from becoming too large a portion of our revenues and profits. This is absolutely essential. We do not know precisely how long it will take for the excess retail inventory to bleed off. According to Display Search, channel inventory for LCD TVs is dropping rapidly. But the correction at our end of the channel will continue for a little while longer. It began to accelerate rapidly for us in mid-June, and I think that it will likely persist into the middle of the third quarter. Another unknown right now is where the mix of optical film margins will eventually settle out. Pricing pressure in this industry is enormous. And while I expect margins to remain attractive and to additionally offset some of the downward price pressure with ongoing cost improvements, given the poor state of the monitor market, the reality is that we will be somewhat lower in mix than in the past. Nevertheless, despite all of what I said, this optical films business continues to be a jewel in 3M's crown and provides a high growth opportunity for the future. 3M's capability remains unmatched in this category, both our technology and our manufacturing, and despite the onset of seasonality going forward, we believe the second quarter will be the low point in the year, revenues will again increase in the third and fourth quarters in anticipation of the holiday buying season. I can assure you that the issues within our control, specifically things like the scale-up of the new multi-layer film manufacturing line to increase capacity, are being addressed immediately and forcefully. They will be resolved as quickly as possible. I mentioned at our May meeting in New York that we significantly underinvested in our core. This fact compounds the transition issues we face, both in cost and targeted growth rates. And finding the right balance in this transition requires a lot of finesse and care. Internally, we're working on new ways to stretch our capital dollars much further than was once the case, so we don't induce a glut of capital spending coming forward. Unfortunately, underinvesting in the past has created some challenges in the present. Putting aside the aforementioned optical issues, manufacturing costs in the second quarter increased in a handful of divisions, and in many cases we can point to undercapacity as the root cause. For example, in our roofing granules business, we are short of capacity in facilities that serve the still hurricane-torn areas of the southern United States. We are still supplying our customers, but we must do so from farther away locations, and we are contractually obligated to pay the huge extra freight bills to get the rock to their shingle manufacturing sites. Nor are we allowed to pass through the costs of raw materials, as copper used to color granules. Copper has tripled in cost this past 12 months or so. These two factors alone cost this business several hundred basis points of operating margin in Q2. Moving now to SG&A. Investment in spending also increased this quarter. This would not have been a visible problem for us, but for the optical issues I mentioned earlier. Our enthusiasm to invest in sales growth contributed to this increase, and we overshot our target of spending mark. But because this increase was self-generated, it can also be self-corrected, and it's being corrected as we speak. We also saw a continued trend upwards in inventory that began back in late 2004 that has to be bled off over the next few quarters. We did this to attack some poor service issues. These service issues are a function of the very long and convoluted supply chains we built over our long history, and over the next few years, we'll gradually unravel that puzzle and change the supply chain footprint to better reflect our customers' service needs. This inventory challenge was exacerbated in the second quarter by the shortfall in optical system sales, but also by the sluggishness we saw in visual systems, automotive, and diaper tape sales, which I'll mention again in a few minutes. Even as we make necessary corrections, the enthusiasm for growth that we shared with you earlier in the year has not waned one iota. The emerging growth mindset at 3M continues to gain momentum and will continue to dominate our plans and our path going forward. When a company makes the kind of change in emphasis that we've been making to encourage growth, it's always a challenge to get the early balance right. Investments in new products and supporting channel investment always happen a little before the sales growth and earnings improvement can be measured. Overall, if you exclude for a moment the shortfall in optical film sales, our growth rate would have been well within our targeted range for the quarter. I can assure you that our growth plan is gaining momentum, and the trick here will be to avoid getting distracted by short-term events and not losing our focus on growth. We achieved this growth despite significant quarterly contractions in some sizable non-core businesses. For example, sales in our visual systems business were down 18% year-on-year, and revenues declined by 8% in our diaper tape business. This latter case is a classic example of a business which did not invest in its own future and suffered the consequences. We are now busily inventing our way out of this problem, but again, it takes extra time and money to do it. The fact is that progress is evident in each main element of our growth plan: expanding the core, growing through strategic acquisitions, building new businesses, and in international growth. Let me take a moment to provide you with some examples. A number of our large core divisions showed double-digit local currency sales growth in the quarter. Examples include dental at 17% growth, commercial graphics at 14%, electronic markets materials division at 13%, electrical markets division at 11%, construction and home improvement at 10%, and occupational health and environmental safety, which is the home to our market-leading family of respiratory products, at 10%. And our traffic and safety systems division, another large core business, was just shy of double-digit growth. I think we could have had even greater sales in some of these divisions if we'd had the necessary capacity. We made significant progress in the quarter toward building new businesses to capitalize on emerging opportunities in high-growth markets. For example, our track and trace initiative is nicely taking shape. We put in place a leader with experience in building businesses at EES to pull together the existing assets within 3M and to identify potential acquisitions to fill in the gaps in our offerings. Turning to acquisitions, we've announced 8 so far this year. Our most recent and largest is the purchase of Security Printing and Systems Limited in the UK. This is a very exciting and potentially very valuable asset. Security Printing has supplied passports to the UK government for more than 40 years, but for us, the addition of RFID components embedded in electronic passports will bolster both our track and trace and overall border and civil security capabilities. They also have superb security and secure ID card capabilities, and we intend to expand and grow this business significantly internationally as part of our track and trace initiative. This is the first of several tuck-in acquisitions in this area that I expect you will see. The fourth element of our growth agenda, international, continued to demonstrate both progress in its potential. Optical film sales dragged Asia's results down a bit, and therefore international down in total. But as we discussed, this is a short-term situation. I call your attention to performance in several key countries In the quarter, China posted local currency growth of 27%, India was up 47%, and Poland grew 24%. Russia posted local currency growth of 22%, and Turkey 34%. Overall, there is no doubt whatsoever that our growth agenda is advancing and delivering real results. The near-term difficulties with optical in no way diminish my confidence and optimism in 3M's prospects. Our top-line guidance remains 5.5% to 8%, which is in the neighborhood of 2x IPI. Realizing that economic conditions wax and wane, 2x appears to be a good growth target for 3M. Now I'll turn the call over to Pat, who will walk you through the financial details of our second quarter results. Pat?
Thanks, George, and good morning, everyone. Please turn to slide number 2. Second quarter sales were $5.7 billion, up 7.5% versus last year. Organic local currency growth was 4.6%, and acquisitions, mainly Cuno, added 2.6% to the top-line growth. Three of our six businesses grew in line with our expectations, primarily healthcare, safety, security, and protection, and electro and communications. On a geographic basis, organic local currency sales were up 6.5% in Asia-Pacific, about 5% in the U.S., and 3% in Europe. As we mentioned on last quarter's conference call, second quarter sales growth was negatively impacted by approximately 1 percentage point due to the timing of this year's Easter holiday. Reported second quarter operating income was $1.2 billion, a decline of 5.5% year-on-year. This percentage does not tell the entire story, however, as 4.3% of this decline was due to higher stock option expense, and 3.9% was due to a combination of special items, which I will explain in detail in a moment. Adjusting for these items, year-on-year operating income was up 2.7%. Operating income margins were 21.5%, including a negative 1.6% margin impact from stock option expensing. Putting these adjustments aside, this was the first time in over 4 years that we did not expand operating margins year-on-year, and we missed our earnings guidance, which I am very disappointed in. Second quarter earnings per share were $1.15, up almost 20% year-on-year. Special items this quarter added a net 10 cents to earnings per share, while last year's second quarter results included a 10 cent penalty. Again, I will explain these items in detail in a moment. Also included in this result is 7 cents of stock option expense in the second quarter, compared to 4 cents for the same quarter last year. Let me be clear. The second quarter increase in option expense is not a function of granting more options to employees. Rather, as we discussed on last quarter's conference call, the increase was largely due to a requirement under FAS 123R to immediately expense stock options upon grant date for those employees who are considered retirement eligible. A 3M employee is considered to be retirement eligible upon reaching age 55 with 5 years of service. 25% of this year's grant award was to these employees. Since we grant our employee stock options in the second quarter, the immediate expensing of those options granted to retirement-eligible employees results in higher stock option expense in the second quarter. Accounting rules do not allow restatement for the retirement-eligible impact. In the second quarter, the specific cost associated with this pool of employees was $55 million pre-tax, or 5 cents per share. I know many of you are interested in a status update on our efforts to seek strategic alternatives for the pharmaceutical business. But there's not much to report yet. An offering memorandum went out during the quarter. We have received initial bids, and due diligence is underway. Please turn to slide number 3 for a recap of our sales performance. As I mentioned, worldwide sales increased 7.5% versus last year's second quarter. Volumes increased 7.4%, with organic volumes up 4.8%, and acquisitions adding 2.6% to growth. Selling prices and foreign exchange impacts basically offset one another in the quarter. In the United States, sales improved 8.4% versus last year's second quarter. Organic growth in the quarter was 4.9%, with volumes up 3.1% and selling prices adding 1.8%. All six businesses had positive growth in the quarter. Acquisitions added 3.5% to U.S. growth in the second quarter. Sales in our international operations were up 6.9% in U.S. dollar terms. Local currency sales were up 6.3%, with organic volumes increasing 6% and selling prices decreasing 1.6%. International selling prices were down about as expected, impacted by our businesses that serve the consumer electronics industry. International sales were impacted by the slowdown in the LCD industry, as our optical film sales are recorded where our customers reside in the Asia-Pacific region. Acquisitions added almost 2 points of additional growth, and foreign currency translation increased second quarter sales by about a half a point. Organic local currency growth was 6.5% in Asia-Pacific, with Japan down 1% and the rest of the region up 11%. Acquisitions added 2.2% of additional growth in the quarter. All six of our businesses posted positive local currency growth in Asia-Pacific during this quarter. Europe delivered 4.9% local currency growth in the quarter, including acquisition-related growth of 1.8%. As we mentioned on last quarter's conference call, second quarter growth in Europe was tempered due to the timing of the Easter holiday. Since Easter is in the second quarter this year compared with the first quarter last year, local currency growth in Europe was held back due to fewer billing days in the second quarter. We estimate the impact on Europe's second quarter local currency growth was about 4 percentage points. Importantly, European organic local currency growth over the last two quarters has averaged over 5%, an encouraging sign compared to recent years. And finally, local currency growth was just shy of 4% in Latin America. Excluding the impact of the decline in our CRT rear projection business in Mexico and the move of a sizable flexible circuit customer from Puerto Rico to Singapore, Latin America organic local currency sales increased 10.3%. Acquisitions added an additional 2 points of growth in the quarter. As we discussed in last quarter's call and included in our first quarter 10-Q, I'd like to take a moment to explain the earnings impact of special items. On slide 4, we have provided a detailed earnings analysis of second quarter special items in both 06 and 05. Two of this quarter's special items impacted SG&A expense. First, we entered into an agreement in principle during the second quarter to resolve the antitrust class action involving direct purchasers of transparent tape that, as previously disclosed, had been scheduled to start trial at the end of May. The settlement is conditioned on court approval, which will be sought promptly upon execution of final settlement agreements and is expected to be granted later this year. Second, during the quarter, we incurred expenses associated with our efforts in seeking strategic alternatives for our pharmaceutical business. These costs included items such as professional fees, along with the retention bonuses for key employees during this transition period. The combination of these two items negatively impacted earnings per share by 4 cents. Also affecting this year's second quarter was $105 million of positive adjustment related to the resolution of the U.S. tax audit through 2001, the substantial resolution of audits in certain European countries, and adjustments to tax accruals for all other open years. These tax adjustments amounted to 14 cents per share benefit. The company will complete the preparation and filing of our 2005 federal income tax return in the third quarter. As part of this process, the company anticipates that it will record a positive adjustment to its provision for U.S. income taxes for 2005. Since the amounts are uncertain at this point in time, our forward guidance today will exclude any such adjustments. George will address our guidance later on the call. As you may recall, in last year's second quarter, we announced our intent to reinvest $1.7 billion of foreign earnings back into the United States, pursuant to the provisions of the American Jobs Creation Act of 2004. This act provided the company the opportunity to tax effectively repatriate foreign earnings for U.S. qualifying investments specified in the domestic reinvestment. As a consequence, in the second quarter of 2005, we reported a non-recurring charge of 10 cents per share. In total, Special items in this year's second quarter resulted in an earnings per share benefit of 10 cents per share versus a charge of 10 cents per share in last year's second quarter. Including all the special items in both periods, second quarter 2006 earnings per share were $1.15 versus 96 cents in the second quarter of 2005. As mentioned, option expense was 7 cents in the second quarter this year versus 4 cents in last year's comparable quarter. On slide number 5, we compare our second quarter P&L versus last year's comparable quarter. Again, note that we elected to restate prior periods for the expensing of stock options. Therefore, all numbers shown will reflect this as well as excluding special items. As I previously mentioned, sales were up 7.5% year over year. Second quarter gross margins were 50.1%, down 70 basis points year on year. The combination of lower than anticipated sales volumes, higher than expected startup costs for a new multi-layer LCD film facility, along with supply chain inefficiencies in a handful of businesses that are capacity constrained, drove much of the increase. These businesses, including Riffin Granules, medical supplies, and respiratory products, to name three. In addition, 30 basis points of the gross margin decrease was attributable to the difference in stock option expense year on year. SG&A expense was 22.4% of sales, up 1.1 percentage points versus the comparable quarter last year. The increase is largely due to the combination of higher advertising and merchandising investments, along with hiring additional sales reps to ensure better global market coverage in many of our businesses. Obviously, these investments are aimed directly at higher revenue growth. Finally, 40 basis points of the SG&A increase was attributable to the stock option expense year-on-year difference. R&D expense increased 10.3% year-on-year, or 6.2% to sales. Operating margins were 21.5%, including a 160 basis point drag with expensing of stock options. Second quarter net interest expense was $11 million versus $3 million last year. With an increase in interest expense due to higher interest rates and a decrease in our interest income due to lower cash balances. 3M's tax rate for the second quarter, excluding special items, was 32.5%, similar to recent quarters. Putting aside the impact of stock options, the tax rate reflects a 30 basis point increase due to the expiration of the R&D and orphan drug tax credits on December 31, 2005. In the event the Internal Revenue Service or the Internal Revenue Code is amended to reinstate these credits, the equivalent positive impact would be reflected in our tax rate in future quarters. Including the special items in this quarter, our tax rate was 23.3%. Net income was $808 million, down 2.6%, and earnings per share decreased about 1%. Second quarter results include $56 million after tax due to stock option expense, or 7 cents per share, versus $22 million after tax and 4 cents per share in last year's second. The sequential quarterly P&L comparison is found on slide number 6. Remember that the first quarter was an all-time record operating margin for the company. Sales were up 1.7% versus the first quarter, as four of our six businesses drove positive sequential growth: healthcare, electrical communications, consumer and office, and safety, security, and protection. Operating income declined 10.5% sequentially, half of which was due to the difference in stock option expense, with the remainder primarily related to the decline in optical film. On a sequential basis, net income and earnings per share both declined by approximately 10%. Stock option expense was 7 cents per share in the second quarter versus 2 cents per share in the first quarter. Slide 7 shows our year-to-date performance. With half of the year behind us, I felt it was important to reflect on our performance to date versus last year. Please remember that while the quarter did not meet our expectations, this is an outstanding business. Margins in ROIC well in excess of 20%. First, sales are up almost 8% through the first 6 months, with organic local currency growth up 6.4%. Acquisitions added an additional 2.4% of growth. Operationally, we are performing at levels very similar to last year. Year to date, we have been able to leverage the top line growth into a 9.4% EPS growth, excluding special items in each year. On a year to date comparative basis, stock options had a negligible impact. Please turn to slide 8, where I will recap our second quarter segment results. Our industrial and transportation business delivered local currency growth of 11%, including 7.9% growth from acquisitions, primarily CUNO. We acquired CUNO in August of 2005. It is a world-class liquid filtration company with a long history of double-digit top-line growth at very attractive operating margins. It is a great addition to our portfolio. Operating income in the second quarter was $321 million, up about 3%, including a negative 3.2% year impact year-over-year due to the expensing of stock options. We drove positive local currency sales growth versus last year's second quarter in all businesses, with the exception of personal care. However, growth was below our expectation in three key businesses: automotive aftermarket, industrial adhesives and tapes, as well as the automotive OEM business, which George referred to, which continues to be impacted by softness in the U.S. auto industry. As we have mentioned in past quarters, and as George referred to earlier, sales in our personal care diaper tape business continued to decline year on year, which reduced overall industrial and transportation sales and operating income growth by 0.8% and 1.4%, respectively. This business is working relentlessly to invent new solutions for its customers to recover volume loss over the past year or so. They'll be more competitive in this space, but it will take us some time. Healthcare sales were $1 billion in the second quarter. Organic local currency growth was 3.3%, with acquisitions adding an additional 80 basis points of growth. Growth was led by our dental and medical supply businesses, two solid 3M franchises that offer some of the strongest brands in their respective industries. Excluding our pharmaceutical business, which is approximately 20% of healthcare, second quarter local currency growth was greater than 7%. Geographically, healthcare's revenue was strongest in North America. Operating income in the quarter was down 5%. Adjusting for stock options and pharmaceuticals, operating income would have been flat for the quarter. Healthcare was adversely impacted in the quarter by operational issues in both medical and orthodontics associated with product startups and supply chain. The underlying fundamentals in healthcare remain very strong. An aging population, along with emerging economies, are rapidly adopting Western healthcare practices, making this business an important platform for future growth. We're investing in sales and marketing capabilities in this business in our core strength areas, such as infection prevention, wound care, dental, and orthodontic product systems, and others. Moving on, the display and graphics business posted local currency sales growth of 6.5%, with an operating income decline of approximately 13%, including a 3.3% reduction in income due to stock options. As George mentioned, commercial graphics delivered strong double-digit local currency growth in the second quarter, with strong end market penetration and differentiated products that offer superior value to customers. And traffic safety systems maintain the momentum from the last three quarters with near double-digit currency, local currency growth. Optical film sales volumes increased at double-digit rates in the second quarter. However, as George mentioned, sales growth was below our expectations. We estimate that the impact from the overall LCD industry slowdown and inventory correction in the second quarter, along with the mixed impact from the weakness in the monitor segment, accounted for approximately two-thirds of the shortfall in optical film operating income versus our expectations. The remainder of the shortfall is due to manufacturing startup costs previously mentioned by George. As in past quarters, sales growth in display and graphics was dampened by the continuing decline of our CRT rear projection business. Excluding the negative impact of the CRT rear projection lens business, total D&G local currency sales would have been up 8.1%. Consumer and office posted organic local currency growth is 4.4% in the quarter, with an additional 20 basis points of growth coming from acquisitions. Growth was led by our businesses serving the retail do-it-yourself channel, boosted by outstanding brands such as Scotch Blue Masking Tape and Filtrete Home Filters. We also posted solid growth in the retail office superstores and commercial office channel. On a geographic basis, revenue growth was strongest in the United States, while growth outside the U.S. remains a bigger challenge, particularly in Western Europe. Second quarter operating income was $121 million, down 11% year-on-year. Options hurt income growth by about 4 percentage points. During the second quarter, we increased our advertising and merchandising investment in consumer offers to support the recent launch of a national advertising campaign for Post-it picture paper. Along with other products such as Scotch Blue masking tape, Scotch-Brite home cleaning products, and NextGear brand bandages. While these investments impacted the growth rate in operating income this quarter, it is a vital step in supporting both new and existing products for our retail customer base. Our visual systems business, which offers primarily analog overhead and electronic projectors and film, continued to experience declines, which reduced second quarter consumer office sales and operating income by 1.1% and 1.6% respectively. We anticipate that operating income in the third quarter will grow at double-digit rates for the consumer and office business. Local currency growth in our safety, security, and protection services business was up 8.3%, $653 million. Growth in the business continues to be driven by strong global demand for personal safety products, especially respiratory protection. We continue to invest in additional respiratory capacity, such as our recent announcement of a new respirator manufacturing facility in Korea, which will serve the Asia-Pacific region. Operating income was $145 million in the second quarter, down 1.6% versus last year's second quarter, including a 3.7% negative impact from stock options. Gross margins declined both year-on-year and sequentially in this business, with the majority of the impact due to roofing granule business, which George described in his opening comments. Finally, our electro and communication business posted sales of $632 million. Organic local currency growth was 5.3%, driven by strong global demand for our specialty adhesives, fluids, and tapes for the electronics market, along with the electrical products for insulating, testing, and sensing. Acquisitions contributed another 80 basis points to growth in the quarter. Operating income was $123 million, up 7% year-on-year, and including a negative 4.3% impact of stock options. Electrical Communications has performed consistently well over the last several quarters. Please turn to slide number 9, where I will review a few balance sheet and cash flow metrics. Net working capital turns were 5.2, down 0.2 turns sequentially, and down 0.4 turns versus the second quarter of 2005. The sequential change is partially due to normal seasonal increases in certain businesses. For example, we build inventory in consumer and office in anticipation of the big back-to-school season. Optical film business is building inventory in preparation for accelerating demand for LCD TVs during this year's holiday season. And finally, in traffic safety and systems, where sales are skewed towards the warmer months of summer, we also build inventory to prepare for this peak season. Capital expenditures were $261 million, an increase of $44 million year-on-year, and $77 million sequentially. To date, we have spent $451 million of our expected $1.1 billion capital expenditure plan in 2006. The second quarter acceleration is demand-driven, as these investments are largely supporting growing businesses. We have recently announced additional capital investments for optical films in Poland, respiratory protection products in Korea, and customer centers in China and Russia, among others. We also have approved capacity additions for medical supplies, Filtrete filters, Scotch Blue painter's tape, and roofing granules, just to name a few. Second quarter free cash flow was $539 million, which was lower than last year, due in large part to second quarter 2006 tax payments of approximately $500 million versus $270 million in last year's second quarter. Also, as I just mentioned, we're continuing to invest in CapEx and working capital in anticipation of increasing demand. We paid $348 million in dividends to our shareholders in the second quarter. Stock repurchases were $527 million during the quarter, up from first quarter's $251 million. Weighted average diluted shares outstanding were 770.4 million, down 2% from last year. And finally, our debt-to-capital ratio was 19% at the end of the second quarter. Now I will turn the call back to George to will address our expectations moving forward. Please turn to slide number 10.
Thank you, Pat. The longer-term outlook for the rest of the year looks okay for now. We have cost-saving actions in place to inoculate ourselves against the remaining short-term challenges of the LCD film situation. But I do see early signs of uncertainty creeping into the U.S. economy and, of course, into the global picture. On costs, we have seen disappointing price gouging from some suppliers and increases in other commodity and transportation costs, and this has crept into our factory costs. This has cost us overall 60 basis points in the year-over-year quarter. Over the next 6 months, we'll be using our superb Lean Six Sigma capabilities to gradually get this back out of the cost base. As for our guidance going forward, for the third quarter, we expect organic local currency sales growth of 4 to 8%. I set the bottom end 4% number to allow for any residual bleed-off in LCD-oriented inventory, with acquisitions adding about an additional 1.5% of growth to this picture. Third quarter earnings per share are expected to be in the range 110 to 115, including 4 cents per share impact from stock option expensing. 2005 third quarter earnings per share restated to reflect stock option expensing of 2 cents a share of $1.08. For the 2006 calendar year, our guidance remains unchanged versus our July 7th press release. We expect full-year 2006 earnings per share to be within the range $4.55 to $4.65, including a 17-cent impact from option expensing in 2006 and 14-cent option cost in 2005. Also including this estimate are the previously mentioned net gains from special items of 10 cents per share in the second quarter of 2006. Organic local currency growth is expected to be 5.5 to 8% for the year, with acquisitions adding approximately 2 percentage points of additional growth. As Pat mentioned earlier, we may have further positive tax adjustments in the third quarter, the amount of which is unknown at this point. We'll also incur additional restructuring charges or other expenses associating with evaluating strategic options for our pharmaceuticals business. Neither of these items are included in our third quarter or full year guidance. Let me just say in conclusion that 3M is a superb company, and we will manage these short-term challenges vigorously. Having led the company for a little over 6 months, I'm coming to know the superb character and capabilities of 3M's people. We don't like getting buffeted by things outside our control, but we do know how to handle them. Whatever adjustments may be made, the underlying fundamentals of 3M, combined with its culture of innovation, give me tremendous confidence in our ability to grow and deliver superior returns over the long haul. That concludes our formal comments. Also joining Pat, Matt, and myself is Jim Stake, Executive Vice President of Display and Graphics. We will be happy to take any of your questions. Thanks, everybody.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press star, then the number 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before entering your request. Please limit your participation to one question and one follow-up. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question is from the line of Mike Judd with the Greenwich Consultants.
Good morning. A question about your comments about wanting to diversify the portfolio, and obviously you're working on the pharmaceutical business. That would actually be sort of the opposite approach. But should we be expecting a larger size acquisition? You know, can you just give us some sense? I mean, you've been making a lot of small acquisitions, but given the rate that you're making of these small acquisitions, it's kind of hard to move the needle.
Yes, Mike, let me pick up that one, please. On the pharma acquisition, a pharma divestiture, obviously that was an issue of taking something out of the company that was non-core, that in many respects didn't have the same kind of steady investment profile that we traditionally associate with 3M. So that was clearly the decision why that took place.
On my comments on optical film, I do believe that it's prudent to find ways to leverage and diversify that portfolio into more applications, so we're not seen as dependent on some of these electronic swings that we saw in this quarter. So that's kind of the answer to that question, Mike. And the last piece of the puzzle, I think the predominant number of acquisitions that we're likely to do are always going to be these kind of tuck-in sorts of things. But if the right value accretive long term opportunity came along, we'd consider it. But we don't have any in our sights at the moment.
And just a quick follow up to your segment results, which is slide number 8. I see you adjusted the healthcare operating income number, but you didn't make any changes to the consumer and office number. In order to get to sort of the clean EBIT numbers, should an adjustment be made to that segment?
Mike, the reason we adjusted healthcare from the what's published in the press release is to back out the special item related to the professional fees and retention related to the work we've got going on in pharmaceuticals. So effectively, we're trying to get that chart to match with our results, excluding special items. There were no special items within consumer and office.
So the tape settlement, where was that basically? Where should that be incorporated?
That actually appears in the corporate segment.
Got it. Okay, thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Your next question comes from the line of Stephen Tusa with J.P. Morgan.
Good morning.
Morning.
Just a philosophical question for George. I know that the timing of the pre-announcement, as well as some of the results that we've seen today, which is a couple weeks after that, and really the businesses even outside of display and graphics were a little bit of a disappointment. You come to 3M. Are you happy with your visibility on the businesses, and do you feel you're getting the right counsel from maybe the finance side of the house as far as expectations and setting those expectations? Is there investment that's needed there, or any kind of changes that are necessary to get maybe a little bit of a better view on what you guys can do, given this is probably not the way you wanted to start by raising in your first quarter with the company and then missing pretty dramatically in your second?
Let me try to answer your question, Steve. We have pretty good processes inside 3M for forecasting. We have great S&OP processes as a general rule. We do a quarterly financial review of each business, actually right down to each division. That, by the way, is new new news. It's not something which happened prior to my arrival here. We did the big business, the sector level review, but we didn't do individual division reviews. So that's new news. So I'm reasonably comfortable with those sorts of things. I think that there are two factors, though, that I would comment on. The first is in these optical businesses, Steve, when you get a situation where your largest customers cancel your orders, a week before the end of the quarter, it is very difficult to be able to predict that kind of event, and you get buffeted that by that, and there's nothing that we as a company or even in the display and graphic business can do anything about that kind of activity. In the other pieces of the business, we always knew it was going to be a bit of a delicate balance, Steve, where we needed to make investments, in particular in advertising and merchandising, but also in the R&D, and you saw the R&D.
No, it's up 10%. That was nice.
You saw those up. I mean, you should see that as an indicator of something pretty positive for the future. It's always a delicate balance, Steve, to put that money out on the counter and spend it, because the results always come a little later. So, at some level, you're always going to see this kind of pattern. Of course, it was coincident with the optical films issue, and it would probably have been a relatively positive story of investment had it not been for the setback in the optical films industry. So at some level, Steve, we've got to make those investments if we're going to drive growth, and they're always a bit delicate and sometimes even awkward in their timing.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeff Cianci with UBS.
Hey, guys.
Hey,
maybe just for Pat on the margin question. Actually, George mentioned you had some of this under your control, and I'm just kind of wondering how much you need to spend. Can you quantify any kind of increase in R&D and SG&A that would be a goal of the company, and you know, what the return on that investment, how quick we would expect it? Am I hearing between the lines here that, you know, 06 is the spending year and 07 we restore that margin? Maybe elaborate a little.
I guess, Jeff, let me I'll take it, then George can pipe in if he wants. You know, let's face it, we have to balance a number of pieces of the business. We've got to balance, you know, top-line performance and bottom-line to really judge how much money you can really invest back, you know, back in the business. We have committed to you and all shareholders that we're after getting more top-line growth, but at the same time, also indicated that we want to continue to maintain at the income level, EPS level, a low double-digit growth rate. So it's going to be a balancing act between those two that will determine exactly how much money you can flow in. The higher our top-line growth rate is, the more money we can invest, you know, back in the business and get it to grow faster. So there's not a precise number that is fixed in nature relative to how much that spending will be, because we've got to run the business on a balanced basis. It's not a matter of let's just go invest all this money and then next year we'll reap the rewards. We have to run it in a very balanced approach.
Let me chip in another couple of comments, Jeff.
Thanks.
Conceptually, what you want to try to do is to invest first in those businesses that've got the faster product cycle times, because that's where you get the earlier pop. But you also have this other thing that we've wrestled with, Jeff, which is in many of the places we don't have capacity. So even if we were to spend money in advertising and merchandising or feet on the street, we wouldn't be able to do anything to respond to those increased sales anyway. So that we've got a little bit of a balancing act between where we're out of capacity, clearly waiting until we solve the capacity issue until we can drive growth, trying where we can to drive growth in faster cycle businesses where we do have capacity. You know, some of our electrical business, by the way, meet that criteria. But recognizing the underlying theme, Jeff, that when you are, in fact, out of capacity in many places and can't always respond to the growth, or if you respond, it ends up being inefficient because you're, you know, running lines inefficiently and paying overtime or outsourcing at lower margins, those sorts of factors that come together. It's going to be an interesting balancing act in this first year, Jeff, until we get through the situation where we're seeing more capacity come on stream.
Thank you for that insight. If I could just add, your sales growth is certainly not bad at all versus your peers, if whoever you want to call your peers. And maybe I'll just give you an opportunity to comment on the one that's lagging in healthcare. Clearly, you know, the drugs are going away, but I'm just kind of wondering, underlying, are these markets not as growthy, perhaps, as other parts of the company, and does this require an internal solution or an external solution for the healthcare growth rate?
Jeff, I'm trying to make sure I understand what you're looking at, because when we backed pharmaceuticals out, the growth rate was 7% for the quarter, which is a good growth rate vis-a-vis our own portfolio. And of course, we wanted to do more. Now, of course, you will find other healthcare companies out there that are more in medical devices and so forth that may have higher growth rates, but both our dental orthodontics franchise and our medical franchises, we feel very, very good about the potential of both of those.
So would 7% be a good goal for you then? You're satisfied with that?
No. That's where we're at today. We want to get both of those up, and I think, you know, Brad referred to those in his May presentation as well.
I think, Jeff, it would have been an interesting perhaps an interestingly different discussion had we not had the challenges in optical films. The growth rates may have been above our targeted rates. And so it would have been a pretty encouraging call, I think, in that context. But thank you for offering that, your kind of perspective.
Good point. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Your next question comes from the line of John Inch with Merrill Lynch.
Thanks. So I want to understand, of the original $1.14 to $1.17 guidance, how much is optical films shortfall, both production and lower volumes? Like, what is that on an EPS basis?
Well, John, let me I'll try to address it this way. The if we had met our optical film expectations for the quarter, we would have been basically at the bottom end of the of our guidance range of the $1.14.
Okay, so that's about 9 cents, right? And I think, George, you said that there was about 2 points of margin miss associated with the production line inefficiencies. Did you mean on display and graphics, or did you mean
optical
film?
I meant in optical films, John.
Okay, so that's like what, one to 2 cents?
I would say that is probably a reasonable range, John.
Okay, so then I guess my question is, you mentioned that the optical films line was down mostly or through most of April. You raised guidance in May. Did you presume that some other piece of the portfolio was going to make up the 1 to 2 cents, or did you just not have the information in hand in terms of what the drag was going to be?
No, our expectation, John, was when we gave you guidance in the second quarter that optical would deliver collectively on their plan, maybe not on, you know, each one of the pieces, but was our expectation that they would deliver the numbers that I just quoted for you.
I think, John, you know, when these things go down and you start them up, the processes really are. We've got to take you guys down there sometime, let you see them. But they are very, very challenging manufacturing processes. And I think if we could get you to see it with your own eyes, you'd really understand just how difficult it really is. And so you never know just after a startup just how difficult it may or may not be. Things may run very, very well, and you're a hero, and things may run less well, and you're not so much of a hero. But I want to underscore one other thing, which I said at the end of my remarks, John, and that was factory material costs right across 3M cost us something like 60 basis points of margin in the year-over-year quarter. So some of the input material, the challenges we faced, really, really did cause us some consternation. And that's not just optical, John. It's broad-based.
Okay, so that's fair. I guess someone could conjecture, though, that variability should have been contemplated when you provided guidance.
Hey John, let me back up. We gave guidance in April. Not May.
I'm sorry, Pat. I was referencing the May 2nd annual meeting or the May 2nd analyst meeting.
We didn't really give any view on short term in that meeting.
Okay, no, that's fair.
About operational issues, John. We talked about long term strategy. We never talked about the quarter. That was never a subject of that meeting.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Just one other quick one then. The $49 million of special items in SG&A, does most of that fall into healthcare if we're trying to adjust margins, or does it go into somewhere else?
Well, there's only 9 of the 49 that actually goes into a business. The other 40 goes into the corporate sector. So you just have to adjust healthcare by the 9, John.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, John.
Once again, everyone, if you are asking a question and you are on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before entering your request. Your next question comes from the line of John Roberts with Buckingham.
Morning.
Good morning, John.
George, in your opening comments, you talked about softness in several non-core areas, and you talked about diaper tape, which I assume is non-core, visual systems, which I assume is non-core.
Yeah.
You included automotive. When you talked about the three, did you mean to include that as a non-core, or did you just
no.
because it was down?
No, I didn't mean to include that non-core, not at all.
Okay, and then a follow-up on the optical films area. Is there a simple explanation why the manufacturing doesn't scale well to larger format? And if it's more complex to make in larger format, why is it lower margin?
Well, in fact, it's actually, you just answered your own question. Because it's more complex, that's why you have lower margin. What happens, John, imagine it's sort of an 80-inch wide piece of material, and you've got to try to get 68-inch wide pieces and 12-inch wide pieces. So you're cutting this out like almost like a patchwork quilt when you're actually converting this kind of stuff. So if you have a move up in large format films, what tends to happen is the yields go down, and therefore the net manufacturing costs go up. If you have a preponderance of your sales in much smaller pieces, so now we're cutting out 4x4 pieces instead of 68x48 pieces, you can imagine if you have any defects in that film across its width or along its length, that you can cut around those, and so you end up overall with better yields. So that's the kind of the dynamic that you're following. We have some very, very precise manufacturing processes, John, that actually spot and mark optical blemishes in the films. And then when the film is eventually converted, we keep a sort of a roadmap of those, very, very complex electronic roadmap of where they are across the film and along the length of the film. And then that record is run on a computer, and we cut around those blemishes. So you can see that depending on the mix of low versus high larger format cutouts, you can end up with yields going down as you move up in size.
Why can't you price to at least maintain margin given your market share? If these are so hard to make, competitive issues should be less.
Well, I think it all depends a lot on who's out there competing with you and what margins they're prepared to tolerate. Because you're always, on the one hand, obviously, the best place to best time to get any improved margin is when you first start selling these sorts of things, and we traditionally do that. But over time, pricing pressure pushes that down, and the balancing act that we've nearly always in the past managed to perform well and didn't perform well in this quarter. Was as we saw price decreases, we'd pop back up in margin because we were able to get costs out of the manufacturing process by all sorts of different ways. So it's all about the competitive dynamic that you see out there, John, that doesn't necessarily always allow you to put prices where you think.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Your next question comes from the line of Bob Cornell with Lehman Brothers.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, continuing on optical film, you mentioned that the volumes in optical, or sales, I think you said, were up double digit. I mean, were you talking revenue sales dollars or units? And what I'm really looking for is units and then price in the quarter.
Bob, volume was double digit. If you look at total revenue, it would be more of a single digit number. We were expecting, of course, a double digit revenue growth in that business.
So units were up 10 to 12 and pricing down 10 type of thing? I mean, is that ballpark?
I'd say, pricing, we've been looking at price on a quarter basis. We give price reductions twice a year. This happened to be the quarter that we banned a price reduction. It's been running on an every 6 months basis, 5 to 6%.
Now, here we are in the middle of July. I mean, how about a status report on the inventory issue? You know, where are you in terms of the inventory work off globally in that channel?
Oh, in that channel?
In optical film, yeah.
And I think and George mentioned it in his comments. There is and you really have to look at it. If you look at it by manufacturer, you have quite a different story. We see that the inventory is coming off. But we also believe that we may see the recovery from our own supply chain a little bit later in the quarter than when they may actually start to...
Well, you don't have a supply chain issue in optical film, do you?
No, it's the issue that we saw it later. When the inventory correction hit, Bob, we saw it a little bit later. Therefore, I think we're going to see it a little bit later coming back a little bit in some of the manufacturers. It looks like, if and Jim Stake can speak to this, It looks like the Korean manufacturers' inventory seem to be in better control right now than the Taiwan, you know, some of the Taiwanese manufacturers. Some of the Taiwanese manufacturers.
Well, here's what I'm getting at. I mean, you've got a third quarter expectation that's well above the second quarter just reported. You know, that, you know, you mentioned that if we're not for optical film, you've been the low end of guidance. So, I'm trying to gauge, here we are sort of at the end of July. You know, how visible the third quarter is in optical film relative to the guidance you just gave.
Well,
maybe Jim can jump on and reference that.
But Bob, it's visible with we don't really know how long the correction is going to take, when the ramp up is going to start back up. Right now, we're expecting that it'll be probably mid quarter by the time that we see volumes starting to ramp back up. Jim, do you have a...
So you haven't seen it yet?
Have not seen the ramp up yet for us.
Now, the other question is, where are the yields on the new line right now relative to, as in last week?
Let me just sort of clarify one thing, just hopefully, these pictures I know are difficult to sort of get visibly when you're speaking over a phone. When there are inventory corrections in the retail channel, the retailers see them first. The ordering pattern for the retailers comes a little bit from the set manufacturers comes a little bit later than that. The ordering for the raw material for the panel parts comes yet later than that, and electronic components and films comes yet later than that. So what tends to happen in the dynamic here is the guys further back up the supply chain see the impact later in the cycle. And by the way, they suffer longer in the cycle before they come out. That's kind of the dynamics. But let me also give you some data on what I've been told this week by Andy Wong, who runs the Optical Systems Division. Andy says that inventories, this is now in the manufacturers, this is now in the TV set manufacturers, exceeded 2 months of supply at their peak. Typically, the industry likes to run somewhere between 3 and 4 weeks of supply. And what Andy told me on Monday is that numbers were down in the this is inventory numbers now, were down in the 2 to 3 weeks. So at their level, Bob, the inventory has been bled off. Now, as Pat rightly pointed out, that varies from manufacturer to manufacturer. The Japanese may be different than the Koreans, and the Koreans different than the Chinese, and the Chinese different than the Taiwanese. So I'm giving you some kind of blended numbers. So that at least is encouraging that in that piece of the supply channel that the inventory is bleeding off. But just because of the first dynamic which I explained to you, it's more likely that we will see a recovery a little later, which is what we've tried to do in the way that we've arranged our forecast. We've anticipated that. And built that into our forecast.
Now, while you're on the phone, what did Andy say about the yields? On the new manufacturing process.
Jim, why don't you pick up the question on yields, please?
Yeah, Bob. This is Jim Stake. I, without giving you specific details on yield numbers, I guess what I would let you know, we have basically two production lines for multi-layer optical films. In the factory indicator, the original line is running exceptionally well right now. We're shipping virtually everything we make on the line, and the quality yields in the subsidiaries are extremely high as well. As George mentioned, the yields vary a lot based on the type of product you're producing. So for handheld devices and monitors and notebooks, the yields tend to be quite high. When you get up to large size televisions, because of the part fit, the yields tend to be quite low. But the new line indicator is actually running very well this week. Now, we've had some ups and downs. We've had a lot of waste. I guess at times we've been having yields down as low as 10%. But at this moment, it's running very, very well.
Like what? What's well?
Well, I guess you could say in terms of jumbos being made, right now we're shipping the vast majority of jumbos being made to Asia for converting.
What's the yield on the original line, just for comparison purposes?
Well, yield, there are all kinds of factors that come into yield, because when you're on a film line, the absolute theoretical yield on a film line based on the way the film is made may be only in the 60% range. So that's sometimes the very best you can do, unless you're making.
And is that the original line doing close to that?
No, it's not at that level. There's still a lot of upside on yields, and I guess that's the way we're looking at this. You know, the yields on this particular process, because it is so technically challenging, and I think I pointed out in New York, the size of the defects we're talking about are so incredibly small that they can't even be detected by the eye. They're about half the thickness of a human hair. And I think because of that challenge, the yields on multilayer optical film will probably never get all the way up to that entitlement level of 60-some percent. But the way I look at it, it's just a huge upside for us as we improve the process.
So imagine for a minute, Bob, you've got sort of three factors going on. Imagine yourself making a gigantic roll of saran wrap. And you take the saran wrap and you grab the edges with these tenters and you stretch it in the lateral direction. So the film which is against the edges where the film is made is useless. So you have to cut all of that off. So when Jim said there's a theoretical yield number, it's because you have to cut those edges off where you grab a hold of them that you lose that feel, that particular piece of yield. Then there's a second issue. Will you manufacture the film with blemishes that will impair the optical performance of the film? And you've got to cut around those issues. And it depends a lot on what the fit, the size of products that you're making as to precisely what yield you will get in that particular issue. So you've got these really three factors, the fit, the blemishes, and this side that you slit off the saran wrap, shall we call it. My colleagues in the optical business are going to get me into some hot water shortly with my visuals, but that's basically what's going on, Bob, and that's why these things are so complex. But focus on what Jim told you, that the blemishes that we detect electronically are less than the size of a human hair. You cannot see them with your eye. But the unfortunate thing is that the precision of, depending on what kind of film it is, whether it's a multi-layer film or whether it's an optically imprinted film like Beth, you can actually see it when you illuminate it from behind. And so these are very challenging manufacturing processes, Bob. Let me
jump in with the next question. I was surprised when you noted in a press release that the margins on the big film for LCD TVs is going to be less than monitor film. I would have thought, and the world would have thought, that because of the new technology and the size of the film, the inability of competition to enter that market, that the margins in the film for LCD TVs, big ones, would be better than monitor film. And is that right in the long term or wrong?
Hey, Bob, this is Pat. And I think George answered this question previously, slightly different. And that is that you always have to keep your eye on what alternatives TV manufacturers have. Not just competing necessarily always film, okay, for the same product. There are other indirect replacement opportunities that TV manufacturers have. So our product has to remain price competitive
in the overall
scheme, okay, of what they're after. And we're absolutely convinced that our film gives the best performance characteristics from both viewing as well as brightness, but it's not necessarily the only choice that they have. So we have to remain competitive; otherwise, there would be no business there. So it's a delicate balance that Andy and the team have to run.
Okay, a final question. Sorry, what built into the guidance you just gave for the third quarter? What is the expectation for optical film in terms of top line and margin?
Basically, it would be. But maybe slightly better than the second quarter is the way that I would say at this point in time.
But with margins very similar, Bob.
Margins similar to this quarter?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
And they were at a low point.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Your next question comes from the line of Jack Kelly with Goldman Sachs.
Morning. George, you had indicated that margins in displaying graphics or maybe just LCD film don't get back to where they were historically. So just wanted to see if you could elaborate on that a bit. I mean, typically displaying graphics was 32 to 33% operating margin. You indicated this was probably the low point, second or third quarter would be low point. We're at, you know, 26 and change. Pricing's a little tougher. You know, can we get back up to the, you know, the high 20s, or what were you kind of thinking about when you made that comment?
Well, what I was thinking about was as much about the mix, Jack, as anything else. If you think about all of the products that get made with our films, one of the real strong points, certainly the early the early market when it was built, was in monitors and notebooks, and primarily in monitors. We had fabulous attachment rates and good margins in those businesses. And what essentially happened is over time, Jack, the prices of those products have fallen. And as Pat was speaking really in his comments about competition earlier, you compete with low performing films in some cases. As these products have become more and more commoditized, more and more manufacturers have said, you know what, I don't need that Ferrari engine in my Chevrolet. I can only get the price of a Chevrolet. I'm not buying Ferrari engines. So attachment rates fell, Jack, and the earnings contribution of those components fell. And when you blend it into what's happening into LCD TVs, they, as a general rule, have been lower margins for us, and really for everybody, as far as I know. And so you have a situation where you have monitors falling in margins, really falling in attachment rates, I should say earnings contribution, and you have LCD TVs growing relatively rapidly that have lower margins. Now, there will come a time in terms of pure earnings contribution where the gain from LCD TV growth will overcome the contraction in earnings compression from monitors. And so it's that kind of blend issue, that mix issue that I was really speaking about, Jack, when I made the comments that I did.
Okay. So 26 is the low point, 32 to 33 we probably don't get back to, so the reality is somewhere in between.
Yeah, I think it is. I think what's going to happen now, Jack, I think there's some other subtleties that have gone on. Of course, you can never actually finally determine with precision exactly what contributes to what, but we've had a lot of people working on getting this new film line back up to the snuff, up and running first, and then getting its yields up to the levels that we're accustomed to. And we spent a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of our people who ordinarily would be focusing on other cost reduction efforts are working on that. So the unknown here is how much might we have got? I mean, it's a question you could ask me, but it's an answer I can't give you because I don't know it. Is what have we suffered in overall margin penalty because we weren't able to dedicate resources on continuing cost reduction versus getting lines back up and running and stable. And that's a long way of saying I think what will happen is we get this particular issue behind us, this particular manufacturing issue behind us, Jack. Those assets will get reapplied, and we may see then some creep back up in margins. I don't want to say that I'm confident, but I'm hopeful that we'll see. Logically, I can convince myself that we'll see some improvements in margins in those products from the bottom that we've seen in this quarter.
Okay, and then Jim, just coming back to when the market gets in balance again with regard to the inventory situation, it seemed like in the past they all thought that from a revenue standpoint, the LCD market or sales for you guys could grow 20% plus, and that would be, you know, after price degradation of maybe 12 or 13%. Do those numbers still look like they make sense? Towards the latter part of this year.
I don't know if we want to speculate on exact numbers for optical, but. It'll definitely be double-digit volume growth that will more than offset the price change don't know if I want to.
Well, that's about all you did in the second quarter, though, it sounds like.
Well, if you look at the dynamics of the situation right now, there's, as George said, there's about 3 weeks of excess inventory in the system overall. Those customers of ours who have controlled their inventories better than others are ramping up, so we're shipping. We're growing with those customers. Those that have not managed inventory so well, our sales are below where we'd like them to be. I guess we'd expect the inventory to resolve itself during the third quarter. I can't say if that's going to be middle of August or into September, but it'll certainly resolve itself kind of day by day as the third quarter goes on, and I think we'll see a significant ramp up on LCD televisions as we've seen in the past. You know, if you look at the big build is usually like August, September, October, and even into November and early December. So we'll see strong growth. I don't want to commit to an exact number because the inventory situation is a little bit hard to predict.
Yeah. No, I realize that. I'm just saying once the inventory situation clears, whether it's 3 weeks or 6 weeks, what are you looking forward to in terms of the growth rate, in terms of volume and dollar volume growth and unit volume growth for that business?
I guess why don't we? The other thing that's a little hard to predict is the monitor to television switch. But I guess if you just assume like 10 to 12% price down, you'd expect to see 15 to 20% total growth for the business.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Jack, one last comment I'd like to make, if I can, please. I speculated in my remarks that we're seeing some creeping seasonality. We're seeing it creeping in. And I'd just like to stress to you that, it's unknown for us, but we may have seen some seasonality creeping in that exaggerated the issue of the inventory correction. And it may well be, if all goes to plan, if the inventory bleeds off and the U.S. economy stays sufficiently robust, I think we may see a flip in the opposite direction in the fourth quarter if our belief that seasonality is now creeping in. So what's likely to happen is you're going to bleed that inventory off. It was exaggerated in the second quarter, the down. You're going to bleed it off through a good piece of the third quarter, and it may well then significantly accelerate in the fourth. That would be the pattern that you would expect if our speculation or our hypothesis that seasonality is now becoming more of a factor.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark Gully with Soleil Securities.
Yeah, as I'm listening to this call, I'm trying to connect some dots here with respect to the LCD film story, and I must confess I'm fairly confused. First of all, I would have thought that TVs would be a much more demanding application, both in terms of the customers and in terms of the performance of your film. Now we find out that the most demanding application seems to have the lowest margins. You built a large facility which appears to have diseconomies of scale with respect to making that product. And, of course, much of the growth in this business is going to come from TVs. So it sounds like there's a huge secular shift that you're talking about for the first time today in the outlook for this business. Am I being too pessimistic?
This is Jim Stake, Mark. Thanks for the question. And I think it speaks to some of the earlier questions that I'd like to speak to. The first one is on what Pat was talking about earlier. I think when you look at LCD televisions, there are certain price points that we have to hit, based on the size of the television, based on the quality that the customer is shooting for. As you know, if they're willing to sacrifice quality, if they're willing to build in a lot more lamps, et cetera, there are alternatives to using our product. So I think price point has to be realistic, number one. Secondly is the part fit yield issue that George mentioned. As these televisions get larger and larger, to get perfect pieces of film becomes harder and harder. And the third one is the physical requirements of the large LCD televisions require more anti-warping kind of performance. So you need to laminate our film onto other materials, which, of course, adds adds cost as well, both in materials and labor over in Asia. I think that's why the margins on large LCD televisions at the moment are lower than what we've seen historically on monitors, or let's say when LCD televisions were first launched and they tended to be like super monitors. They tended to be not so huge, and they tended to be high-performance monitors that used DBEF. So I think that's why the margins are lower in the television segment. The other thing I think we're seeing, as I mentioned, I think when LCD TVs first were introduced, they were on the smaller side, and they were all positioned to be rather premium products. I think as that has evolved, as you know, they've migrated to much, much larger sizes, and at the same time, they've segmented the market into, let's say, the really high-performance products, the mid-range, and the really low-end. And I think the really low-end can't afford our product today, so we're really focusing on the mid-range and the premium segment of the television market. So I hope that helps to explain it.
A little bit, but George, it doesn't sound like you're being rewarded for bringing great 3M technology to this business. I'm still confused. The biggest piece of the growth of this business, you can have the lowest margins. You're not getting rewarded. What gives?
The other thing I'd mention.
Hey, Mark, just a question or just a comment. A lot of this is a relative discussion as to what the margins are here. The TV business is still an absolutely superb business to go after. The other thing I wanted to point out a little bit was on when we get into this, the discussion on this new capacity that we're putting in Decatur. This was not just about installing new capacity. It was also trying to get at a much more cost-effective operation as well. That the new facility we're putting in, as once we get up and running, should have a much better cost position than the prior one. That's been
that helps.
And that's been part of the strategy all along. Is it wasn't just putting more capacity the same in. We knew we had to also get a step change in the cost performance as well to compete in a much lower priced down market. So that's been part of the strategy. Why it's so important for us to get that facility up and running here as fast as possible.
Well, that line is designed for 2x the speed and 2x the width. So in a single facility, you can pump out significantly more product. So you're really getting some leverage on the volume. And of course, if we can, and all manufacturers are working on this sort of stuff, a focus will always have to be yield, because that's another significant issue on how to drive net manufactured costs in these products.
So to the extent the second line is more or less dedicated towards the TV side, do you see a point at which the lower costs offered by that facility, both in terms of speed and width, will allow you to offset the margin pressure that Jim alluded to earlier in terms of extra lamination and things like that?
That clearly is the goal, Mark. That was the design goal, clearly.
Any idea how long it'll take to achieve that goal?
I think it's going to be months, but there's no real way of knowing with precision. That's the reality.
Thanks for that detail. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
Your next question comes from the line of David Begleiter with Deutsche Bank.
Thank you. Question for Jim. Jim, have you said how much lower the margins are on the LCD TVs versus the TV monitors and notebooks?
Oh, I have not.
Any just sense of, is it 1,000 basis points lower, or is it more or less?
Hey, Dave, this is Pat. I'll try to jump in and help Jim out here. We haven't, and part of it is that, and I think as George and Jim have both described, is the fundamental difference. Of course, the products are different as well, but the fundamental difference in the margins between monitors, handhelds, and notebooks and TVs is really the yield side of it. The pricing per se is a little bit differently. So the key determinant there is for us to get our manufacturing yields up. They'll determine, you know, what the margin spread is primarily in that market. So it's a cost issue as compared necessarily is there that difference of that big a difference in the pricing of the market.
Now that's very helpful. And Jim, one more thing on the notebooks and monitors, as you have seen commoditization of those products, have you given up additional share on the low end to other competitors?
That's a good question. On monitors, it's really more of a shift in technology in the panel. You know, they've gone to very low cost monitors, as George mentioned. I think he used the word commoditization, and they switched to sort of a low end technology for LCD panels that allows more light to pass through. So I think the need for our types of films and monitors has become less. There's still going to be a premium segment of monitors where our films will find good applications. So I'd say we have not really lost share to competitive brightness enhancement films, but we've lost attachment rate because of changes in the panel technology on monitors. On notebooks, I think you're familiar with the key competitive alternative there that we've seen for some time is turning film, which is sort of a different take on prism films. We had lost a little share to turning films over time. That's been stabilized. That was stabilized more or less 6 months ago, and we have not really lost more share on notebooks.
And Jim, sorry, last thing. What's the mix breakdown between films for LCD TVs and the rest of the portfolio? How much is the business now LCD TVs?
That's really grown very quickly, and if you look at the latest figures in 2006, it's more or less 30% of the total sales dollars today, LCD TVs.
That would equate to square feet of your film being produced as well, or sold?
I don't have that figure handy. That would be a larger percentage going into TVs than what I just gave you.
So just to be clear, your business now is about 30% LCD TVs for films?
That's about right, yes.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Dimitri Silverstein with Longbow Research.
Good morning. A lot of my questions have been answered. Can I go back for a little bit? If you look at all the issues that are facing the company, whether you're talking about inventory corrections or plant problems in the optical films, you have declining sales in diaper tapes and rear projection CRTs. You've mentioned an overall slowing down in some of the economic sectors that you're exposed to, under capacity in other sectors. With all of that, you're still looking at acquisitions. You're still looking outwardly a lot to try to generate some business growth. Do you feel that there's too much on your plate right now that you should be concentrating on getting the internal things fixed before looking outward or trying to get your capacity expanded before you go after extra business, or can this all be done at the same time? Is there enough infrastructure in place for you to keep tabs on the progress in all of these areas?
Excellent question, Dimitri. But the reality is the answer to the question is yes. And the answer to the question is yes is because different people do these different things. The focus on factory comes from factory people. The focus on market development comes from business development people and M&A, and the new product comes from other parts of the company. So it appears to us that we readily have the capacity to handle a number of spinning plates at one time. So, but thank you for the question, but it's probably not to the concern that you think it is.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeffrey Sprague with Citigroup.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Jeff.
Just kind of getting back to kind of managing the changes in the demand flow of the business. Given that you are at the back of the chain, you know, thinking retail demand to OEM to panel to you guys, I understand if somebody cancels the last week of the quarter, but you would have thought through point of sale information and things like that that you wouldn't have been so surprised. And I'm just wondering if you'd give us a little bit of color on, you know, how you actually measure the market. And as a follow-up to that, I believe you said, although maybe I got it wrong, that you are actually now building inventories in your film business in preparation for the second half. So in essence, you're not waiting for the demand pull from the OEM. You've decided to go ahead and start building in anticipation of that. It sounds like there could be some risk there too. So if you could just address that whole range of questions of staying in sync with what the demand is.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Jim again. I'd say, first of all, we are building some inventories in anticipation of the LCD TV ramp up that we expect. So that's true. Not a huge amount, but we are building some. We do a lot of monitoring of the markets. We do retail monitoring mainly in the U.S., and that's probably one of the weaknesses we have. The LCD market, as you know, is a very global market, and the LCD TV market is larger in Europe than it is in the U.S. and larger, you know, it started in Japan, so we need to probably improve our retail market knowledge outside of the U.S., but we study the market in the U.S., we subscribe to the same types of reports you do and get the details on panel inventory, but the problem is, in the end, we're kind of dependent on our customers, and we're there to serve them. And if they want to order our products and they want to ship within the next couple of days, we need to be there to service them. And that's that's the final metric. And we have to be there. And that's kind of what happened. That we were receiving information that they were still going to be looking for films, and in June it just dried up, and they ended up canceling some orders, and you know the story.
And then this issue of kind of attachment rates on large screen LCD TVs, basically engineering a non-film solution. Where is really the pinch point on that? Is the OEM backward integrating into those type of applications, or is someone stepping up in the supply chain and really pushing that alternative approach?
Well, it's probably both, but I would say that on the television side, the reason I'm so confident in television is that I think brand will always matter, and I think quality will matter in televisions much more than it has in monitors. I don't think people really think about what brand of monitor they have on their desk, but they do care about what brand of television they have, and they do care about the quality of the picture they have on a television. So we have seen a segmentation, as I said, and in the low end, there are televisions out there that have no 3M films inside, but in the mid-range and the high end, they definitely see the value of our films, and I think Our goal has always been to maximize attachment rates and to maximize operating income dollars and economic profit dollars, and that's what we'll continue to do.
And then just, I think George in his intro mentioned mechanical failure. Jim, is that part of the problem, or is that just when it rains, it pours type of dynamic that just further mucked up the quarter? Is this mechanical issue related to the yield issue and everything else that's going on in the business?
No, it was really definitely a when it rains, it pours kinds of issue, because we're already seeing some challenges with the quality with these particles and with the tiny defects that I described earlier, and then we had a very unexpected mechanical failure, and it was not easy to repair. It took about 2 weeks of extremely intensive work to repair the mechanical damage, let's say, and then another 2 weeks to really fine-tune all the control systems and take a lot of preventative actions to prevent that from ever happening again. So that was a surprise, a nasty surprise, but we're definitely through that, and now we're focused much more on the film quality issue. The other thing that didn't come out earlier, I think we've already demonstrated with this new piece of equipment, it was built for LCD television. We've already demonstrated that it can produce better film in terms of flatness, in terms of color uniformity, so we are really confident that we'll get the yields up, get the cost right, and end up with a superior product for television.
And then just two quick follow-ups for Pat. I think, Pat, if the settlement's in corporate, if we adjust out of that, corporate is a de minimis number in the quarter.
That's right.
What's going on there?
Well, you know, normally we run, you know, give or take $15-20 million there. It does, you know, it's just kind of on a quarter by quarter basis. So there really wasn't anything that unusual that you ought to look at, Jeff, in the quarter.
But I assume there must be some little gains or something going on in there, right?
No, there's not. There's nothing. There's a lot of, you know, onesie twosie things that get reported there. Sometimes it's plus, you know, plus five. Sometimes it's a minus five. Nothing material.
And then just on free cash flow, Pat, you mentioned the tax payment issue in the quarter, and there was some talk around inventory, obviously impacting the numbers. But what is the look on free cash flow in the second half of the year? And you know, I don't know if you can give us any early thought on how these things kind of play out as you get into 07.
No, you know, on a long term basis, there's no reason for me not to believe that our free cash flow will somewhat mirror our net income. You do have quarterly movements because of tax payments and the like, and you know, when inventory gets built or depleted. But on a long term basis, I really don't see too much of a difference there. Now, longer term, it's our desire. We've got to get our inventories back down. We're going to struggle here a little bit as we get some of our supply chains fixed. But long term, you know, it's our objective is we've got to get our working capital, and specifically in this case, inventories back down. But it's going to take us a while to achieve those levels.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jeff.
Your next question comes from the line of Tony Bowes with A.G. Edwards.
Thanks, and thanks for extending the length of this call this morning. You know, my question, I guess, goes to the long-term growth of your optical film business. And as you said this morning, 30% of sales are derived from LCD TVs, and therefore 70% is derived from notebooks and monitors primarily. And if those are, you know, potentially shrinking in dollar value or in sales, not only due to price declines but also decontenting, I mean, won't it take a while before you can really get back to a sustainable double-digit sales growth in optical films, you know, given your current mix and the amount of time it'll take for the film business to really, you know, kind of outweigh the effects of what's going on in monitors in particular, but also probably to a certain degree in notebooks?
I think it's a very good point, Tony. If you look at our business, we have four main segments: television, monitors, notebooks, and handhelds. So I think you probably forgot to mention handhelds, but for us in particular, that's a very, very important segment. So we see growth in handhelds. We see notebooks holding steady, and actually if you think about some of the dynamics in the industry, people are shifting away from monitors into notebooks, which is a good thing for us. I think other people are shifting from monitors kind of into an all-purpose monitor television, which is also probably a good thing for us. So we see a lot of strength in notebooks, in handhelds, and in TVs. I think you have a good point on the short-term view, because we are in sort of a period of adjustment right here where we have the combination of the inventory adjustment, you have the monitor decontenting, and you have the end-of-the-year push on TV. So it's going to be going to be a little bit difficult to predict between now and the end of the year, but I feel confident we'll see good growth from TVs, good growth from handhelds. I just can't really give you a very firm number on top line. And as far as sustainability, none of the fundamentals have really shifted that much for us in terms of the fundamental strengths of the business. I think we just have to keep focused on attachment rates and on yields and getting our costs down and making sure we're on every LCD display we can get our hands on.
And Jim, just to clarify, I mean, what would monitors represent as a percentage of or as an end market for your optical film business?
Well, it's shifted quite a bit over the years. If you go back to when I first started in this job in 2002, the monitors were about 45% of the total business. In 2006, we're talking more around 20%. So it's there's been a significant shift over time, and that's accelerated in the past year or so, I'd say. But monitors really hit the wall from an inventory standpoint in second quarter.
And then lastly, Jim, I wonder if you could draw any parallels between this current inventory correction and I suppose the one that we experienced a couple of years ago. And, you know, it struck me that maybe the last inventory correction from a couple of years ago, took, three quarters maybe to really sort itself out, and it sounds like your expectations are for something that is resolved in a much shorter length of time.
I think that's right. I think the previous dip that I didn't really personally live through, the one that back in 01, 02 time frame, if I remember correctly, was more challenging than this one. I think if you talk to Andy Wong, who George mentioned, I think he sees this inventory correction as being a little shallower than ones he's seen in the past.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you very much, Tony.
That concludes the question and answer portion of our conference. At this time, we will turn the call back over to 3M for some closing comments.
Thank you, everybody. Well, while the second quarter was disappointing, I can assure you all that actions are in place to drive growth at the same time, address as quickly as possible our manufacturing challenges. We are both optimistic and energized about the second half of the year and working very hard to meet our commitments to stakeholders of the company. So thank you, everybody, for listening. I do appreciate your time very much. Thanks, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. You may all disconnect, and thank you for participating.